Not everyone needs to go to school to succeed. There are plenty of examples of self-taught men and women who went on to achieve greatness. Daniel Wolfe wrote about a few of them in his book, How Lincoln Learned to Read. He described a few of these cases and how they shape the way we think of public education, starting with Benjamin Franklin.
He's a real prototype, I think, in how Americans look at their education. And he was a dropout and spent a good deal of his career then making fun of educated people. So I think that sense of what is this good for and why do we do it goes way back, pre the United States, and is a very healthy thing.
Tell us a little bit more about Ben Franklin, because from your description of what he was like as a boy and young teenager, he sounds like a kid who today would probably be diagnosed with ADHD.
You know, he was the 10th child of his parents, who were soap and candle makers in Boston. And there was a Puritan tradition that your 10th child was your tithe and would become a member of the church. And he read very early on, which was, I think, partly because he was smart and also because he had all these older siblings who were wandering around reading. So they sent him to Boston Latin. And the route was that you were supposed to go to Boston Latin, and that would get you into Harvard, which was one of the first colleges, and that would turn you into a minister. So he was all set on that route, and he did a year of it and dropped out for slightly mysterious reasons, although he does mention in his autobiography that he was a leader of boys and often led them into trouble. Hmm. So that may have been part of it. He then tried a year of something called a writing school, which was much reduced from Boston Latin. It was essentially reading, writing, arithmetic, and then never went to school again. He worked at his father's soap and candle business, which was in the downstairs of their house. And then he was apprenticed to his older brother, who was a printer.
And some of his early writings, when he began writing for his brother's papers under a pseudonym, he delighted in kind of skewering what people at the time thought was important in education, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the first things he wrote under a pseudonym of Silence Do Good as a widow woman in the country. And this was a fairly strong tradition at that point, was that you took a pseudonym and kind of disguised yourself that way so you could say all sorts of outrageous things. And one of the first columns he wrote, which his brother didn't even know he'd written, because he was sure his brother wouldn't publish him if he did know, was about a dream she had that everybody who went to Harvard went there just to make money and make connections and didn't really care about the Bible or becoming ministers and cribbed their sermons. And it's the sort of thing that in a Puritan colony you couldn't get away with for a second if you signed your own name to it. And he managed to do it, again, under a pseudonym and would do it, you know, as Poor Richard later on in his life and did it all through his life. It was sort of a tweaking of the establishment.
So this scorn for elitist education goes way back to the founding of this country, and you can see it running all the way through, you know, right up to the present day. And yet, oddly, Franklin himself, for all his scorn of elitist education, went on to become a big proponent of schools and of education, right?
Right. I mean, you know, proposed a college where, granted, they wouldn't have to study Latin and Greek, but they would still learn. Yeah, I think it's a conflict that continues to exist, which is, on the one hand, there are things that you can be taught and learn in an academic environment that are useful. And on the other hand, people going, yeah, but what really counts is what you go out and do. One of the other guys I profile is Henry Ford. And Ford went through, I think, eighth grade out in Michigan. And he would later say, you know, to be a king of industry, as he turned out, you needed a little school, but not too much.
Yeah, well, Ford's another famous scorner of formal education. Isn't he the guy who said history is bunk?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't want to give the impression that all of these people felt that way. I mean, you look at, for example, Abigail Adams, who's the person I profile after Franklin. She desperately wanted more school, and she couldn't because she was a girl.
Yeah, so that's the other strand that runs through this history is all of the disenfranchised populations, women and Black Americans and Native Americans, and their struggle to be allowed into education. So what was Abigail Adams' life like as a young girl and as a young woman? What were girls allowed to learn then?
Well, her father did what Ben Franklin turned down, which is went the Boston Latin, Harvard, minister route and ended up a minister in a small town. And he and his in-laws both had pretty good libraries. So although she couldn't go to school, she was a person with some money and some leisure and spent hours in the library reading and eventually writing. She was, you know, I think one of our great letter writers back and forth because she was separated from John Adams so long. You know, one of the things I talk about is that in the era of the letter, you kind of needed to write because that was how you maintained your contacts with your friends and family. So that was a real skill that she taught herself, but that was very useful to her for, you know, the rest of her life.
At what point did the vision of American public education begin to include higher education?
Well, you know, later on, post-Civil War, I profiled W.E.B. Du Bois. And here's a African-American in Massachusetts, and his kind of way out, his hope, was schooling, because it was the one arena he felt where he was going to be judged on what he did, not on the color of his skin or his economic background. For Du Bois, it was absolutely the key to the kingdom. It meant, as far as he could tell, that he could get a better job, and more importantly, he realized that he could go to college, which was, you know, out of the question for a black man in those days. There, I think what I found was something like 650 Negroes had graduated from college in the entire history of the country when he decided to go.
So to a certain extent, he wanted to prove that a black man could go to college. And I suppose, did he think that once he went to college, he would, in a sense, be free?
You know, he's very kind of stark about that. He says he wanted to go to college because all the other kids did.
You know, so far, all the stories of great Americans that you've looked at, the one thing they all have in common is whether or not they managed to get much of an education, they were all really fueled by this profound hunger for education. They were drawn with a great intensity, all of them, to book learning and to books and to the world of ideas. I guess it makes me wonder what it is that propels some people into greatness and whether you... I don't think you can teach that. I think it's just inborn. But what do you think?
Well, that was Henry Ford's theory, and it ended up looking pretty ugly by the time he was done, because Henry Ford essentially said you're either born great or not. And what public education was for was to teach everybody else to stay in line, essentially. And in line is the right metaphor because, you know, he was setting up a conveyor belt. And he wanted people to be well-behaved and have enough education to do the job, and that was it. And at the end of the day, that doesn't look good, to me anyway, because one of the things I learned from the book is I think, from writing it, is I think everybody has that hunger. I mean, I haven't met anybody who doesn't want to learn. Henry Ford wanted to learn about gears and watches. That's what he cared most about. He was terrible in school. Ended up not being able to spell. You know, Rachel Carson, someone else I wrote about, wanted to go out into the woods and wanted to see the ocean because she grew up in Pennsylvania and never had. I think that hunger is there. I think it, in fact, takes quite a lot of effort to stamp it out of people.
Daniel Wolfe is the author of the book, How Lincoln Learned to Read, 12 Great Americans and the Educations That Made Them.